Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome back to the QuakeCast. And today, my lovely co-host is JCR. How are you, JCR?
Hey there. Doing good. Hey, we got a great episode lined up today. We will be speaking with Amorpher, an audio composer with a dark specialty. Dark ambient, that is. We'll speak with him about his dark ambient music, his involvement with the Quake community, and his custom program synthesizer, Dr. Amorpher's Sinister Synth.
And the doctor part's not a nickname. He actually has his PhD, and we're going to hear a little bit about that later.
So when I was growing up, my family didn't really have enough money to afford a PC, but luckily, they did buy me a console, and my first experience with Quake was on the Nintendo 64. I remember reviewers kind of roasting it at the time because it was a straight PC port, but for me, this was the first time I ever seen Quake, and it was the grittiest and the most sinister game I played, and I really got hooked into it. Despite the N64 controller, I still loved it from then on.
Very cool. Yeah, I've played it not too long ago, and that controller is so tough, so hard to navigate.
Yeah, these days, if you want a better controller, I recommend the Brawler 64 controller. It kind of looks like a halfway between a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One, and so it makes it a little bit easier to play. But still, you don't have the twin joystick, so it's not as good as modern gaming, but it's better than the old school Nintendo 64.
Yeah, I caught that one not too long ago. Have you ever played Hexen 2? What is it, Hexen 2? No, Hexen on N64?
Yeah, it's split screen. So I made my college roommate play it with me, and then I made my wife play it with me, and we're still married. Yeah. So. Well, Hexen 2, Hexen 64 is a little bit nicer because if you have two people, you can find all the hidden and random switches a little bit easier than if it's just you by yourself.
I need to try that. I need to play that. But I don't want to buy two brawlers. Oh, well.
They're only 30 bucks.
Right on. All right. I'll have to grab. I will grab them and I will play them and I will get lost in Hexen 64. Yeah.
I gotta say, it's interesting that you mentioned that like Quake 64 was how you got into it, because that's how I got into it as well. And one thing about the Quake 64 that's different from the regular one is the soundtrack, which I'm sure you know.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So Aubrey Hodges made the Quake 64 soundtrack, and he also made the Doom 64 soundtrack. I would go back and forth playing those games, and the thing is, with those ambient soundtracks, you don't really notice them. But then if you go play like a PC port and you download it and you don't get the music, you find something's missing. The atmosphere is gone. So I went back and I started downloading these soundtracks and I became semi-obsessed with them, just how they could create an atmosphere and take your mind away to a new place.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I've heard the Aubrey Hodges stuff. And it's been a while. I meant to kind of review it before we jumped on, but I didn't get a chance. But yeah, you're obviously very heavily influenced by him, but I think you take, like, I got to say, I just want to say this right now. Your music, I love dark ambient, first of all, and your music actually is disturbing to me. And I definitely want to talk about this later, but you know, I embrace dark stuff. I don't find things really that scary. You know, I think it's more of just another genre of entertainment. But there are some, like I was listening to last night for hours, and there were some times where I had to kind of sit back from my desk and just kind of take a breath because your stuff was just scaring the crap out of me. So good job.
Thank you. Yeah, I sent you all kinds of random tracks, and the general theme with my tracks, I always try to be the most menacing or the most foreboding as I can. And I think some of that comes with being self-taught. So when you're self-taught, you don't always know the proper technique. So your timing might be off, your chords might be somewhat dissonant, and that helps create a darker atmosphere.
And one thing I will say, your discography on Bandcamp, and of course we'll have links for all this, and you know, you definitely evolved over time. You had the kind of the your initial release, I believe, was the death kind of death metal sort of.
Yeah.
Great guitar, and, you know, great sound design, and great, you know, it moves, you know.
I had to teach myself how to play guitar, and that's what came out of it. And I don't have an actual amplifier, so I plugged my guitar into my computer, and I was messing around with software amplifiers. And I got it good enough sounding that I would listen to it on my own, but I'm still not 100% happy with guitar tone. But I got it to that level, at least, that, oh, I'll listen to it on my iPhone and not worry about it too much.
Did you have you since combined some of the guitar with your synthesizer, which we'll, of course, we'll get to.
So I am thinking about doing that, where I'll have my synthesizer spit out chunks at specific time steps that I can splice in with my guitar. The idea, though, is trying to compose guitar riffs that are more ambient and non-repetitive, which sounds like a big challenge. I don't know if I'm good enough to do it yet, but that is something in my, I'll say, like, 5-year plan.
Nice. So, JCR, do you want to talk about some of your collaborations or some of the map jams and things that you guys have worked together on?
Well, I mean, you know, I was just in a rush putting together my map for Insomnia Jam when, I mean, I knew about Amorphous stuff before, but I was kind of dipping my toes in asking a musician / composer to provide like a track for what I was going for. And at the time I had just played through Doom 64 again. And you know, the Aubrey soundtrack was still fresh in my mind. And I thought, why don't I do something that would fit with, you know, like something within along those lines. And, you know, Amorpher was very gracious in offering it up. He almost insisted that I use his music. And I had picked out a couple of tracks, and it was like, you know, we clicked on which one it was going to be. You know, like, I had my first pick, and he was like, yep, that's the one you should do, for sure. I had just sent him some pictures, and I did like a little preview video. I mean, the rest is history.
Yeah, I think JCR was the first one to pick up my tracks and use them in the map. I think you might have been the first one to really notice them when I was posting and sharing them. And I was sharing them around because my music is obviously influenced by video game soundtracks. And I've been playing Doom mods and Quake mods and Quake map packs for a long time now. And you mappers just give them out for free. They just let us play them for free, and they keep these old school games alive. And I really appreciate that, because there was a period in my life about 5 years after the N64 where I stopped playing games. I didn't really like where the FPS games were going. And then I discovered that there were these big modding communities, and they brought me back into video gaming. And I thought, it's the least I can do is, if my music might help them out, I don't know if it'll be their cup of tea because it's some strange stuff, but if it'll help them out, I'll gladly give it to any mapper who wants to use it in their map pack.
Yeah, and I listen to your stuff when I'm mapping, and last night I was messing around with Quake C, and it's funny because it's so ambient, I can listen to it and still sort of concentrate on the Quake C, except for when I'm getting scared and disturbed. but yeah, it's my mind doesn't automatically go to asking people, because, you know, it depends on who the artist is. Some people do want money or recognition, or, you know, a lot of people are very generous with this stuff. And you've turned me on to some people for some other videos. Star Thief, I think, was a really good find.
Yeah,
he's so great. He's great. Great, I should say.
So Star Thief is from ambientonline.com. So if you get, or I think it's .org. So if you guys don't necessarily want dark ambient when making music, they have general ambient, which is a little bit more pleasant than what you would hear from me. So if you want to expand your horizons, I recommend going to that website.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm a huge fan of, you know, Cryo Chamber, and I've bought physical CDs because I've loved stuff so much. It was funny, in your bio, you talked about going to sleep and listen to Aubrey Hodges, I believe.
Yes.
Which is crazy, which I could see that. Yeah, it's super intense, I would say. But listen, I know you'll know this one. I'm Sabled Sun Signals.
Yeah. I think
one and two. That is my go-to sleepy time drone stuff. So, you know, Cryo Chamber, I don't want to say it changed my life, but I'm so glad it enriches my life so much. So I'll definitely, I eat all this stuff up.
Yeah, Cryo Chamber found a way to find dark ambient fans. Dark ambient has been around since probably as a official genre since the late 80s. It's existed in similar styles within concrete music, which dates back to the 30s. But it's always been very like obscure, very academic. So it never had that big of a fan base. And somehow, I don't know how Cryo Chamber did it, but they found enough dark ambient fans out there to create a big enough label to give out physical releases. It's amazing what they've done.
Yeah. And it's basically just one guy. I believe he's in Oregon, and I should have had his name ready, but anyway, he's super talented. And what he does is a lot of insane graphic design and good packaging of the things. And then I just think also the releases are really smart. You have some of the ones that I've purchased were kind of the Elder God stuff, you know, Shoggoth and things like that.
Yeah,
and
they had a different Lovecraft series of these big releases that were many hours long.
Yeah, and it's a collaboration between artists, so that it just blends because these are long tracks, like 54 minutes or whatever, and they blend really perfectly. And it's one of those things that doesn't feel forced at all. When it's like Cthulhu, you know, you just listen to it and you go, yeah, that's reminding me of Cthulhu. They really nailed it. So it's a combination of marketing, packaging, and just graphic design. And then the audio is amazing. So,
yeah, it's funny you mentioned Cthulhu and Lovecraft and all that, because when I was programming my synthesizer, I was actually listening to the Dunwich Horror on audiobook. And so I had this Lovecraft story going on in my ears while I'm programming it. And some of my first sounds and tracks that came out kind of remind me of a Lovecraft kind of thing, because I was listening to the iBook at the same time. And those tracks went onto my first ambient album, Bleeding Edge.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, let's talk about your synthesizer, because I think that's amazing. You're like, you couldn't find something that you wanted that sounded like you wanted, so you just made it. So that's pretty awe-inspiring.
Well, so my background, I'm a physicist and I work in a lab right now. And in my work, I do a little bit of programming to do signal processing and data processing. And so I got inspired to make a synthesizer because first I was, as mentioned earlier, I was trying to sleep to Aubrey Hodges' soundtrack, and I had a soundtrack on to drown out all the noise from the freeway next to me. And it was really good for like a month. But I was listening it on repeat for so long, I started to anticipate the tracks. And actually, the best soundtrack I found from his to sleep to was the Quake 64 soundtrack, because it didn't have these loud, high-pitched noises that will suddenly disturb you. But unfortunately, I started anticipating one track, The House of Chthon, that track when you fight the boss. I started anticipating because it had such a deep, somber tone. And I was so excited when it was about to come up, I would stay up at night. And so that was not good. I don't want to anticipate. So I wanted to find some more dark ambient so I could sleep to. And I couldn't find anything quite like Aubrey Hodges out there. And instead of going around and starting to complain to people, I was like, well, it's better to do it myself than to complain. And I already had my couple of my death metal tracks out by then. So I was familiar with the software called FL Studio, and I was going to do it in there. And I just looked at how I would need to make the sounds, and it became difficult because with Aubrey Hodges' stuff, he finally adjusts the pitch, and there's pitch bends, there's panning, there's all these effects that gradually vary over time. And that requires a lot of setting up in FL Studio. So I was like, well, maybe I should start making my own synthesizer. I already know how to mix frequencies and stuff for my data processing. And so I used this scientific software called MATLAB, and I started programming. If I had to do it again, I probably would have done it in Python. But MATLAB has a lot of these fast routines where you can quickly do like a Fourier transform if you want to edit any of the frequencies, or if you want to interpolate to create different pitches. So I started programming it in there. And to get sound sounding good, they usually stack up a lot of effects. So you need like maybe a little bit of distortion, a little bit of bit crunch, reverb. Some, I have this convolution technique to smooth things out. And so I started programming it, those in there. And if I wanted them to sound good, I would want them to sound vary as a function of time, kind of like what Aubrey Hodges did with his sounds. And I quickly started seeing my synthesizer start to have a huge parameter space where all these things can vary as a function of time. And part of my motivation with that was kind of like analog synthesizers. And if they get a bit unstable, they can do that. But it became a huge parameter space that was hard for me to navigate. So I was thinking, hey, why don't I have my computer randomly vary these parameters as a function of time, and then I'll have it going through, spit out all these sets of sounds. And so I have these big libraries of sounds that I generate overnight, and I kind of pick and choose from them. And the way I vary them is a noise called Brownian noise. And if you look at Albert Einstein's most cited papers, his most cited paper is not for general relativity. It's for Brownian noise. And what Brownian noise is, if you look in a microscope and you look even finer than what you'd see for bacteria and stuff, you see all these little vibrations. And in the back of the day, they thought, oh, are these like living organisms even smaller than bacteria? But what Einstein showed is that they're just dust particles and large particles that are vibrating, and they vibrate according to this Brownian noise, which is like the slowly varying noise. So I have all these slowly varying noise vectors going on in my sounds. And so what I got to do is I have all these sounds, and then so it's like a computer generated thing. And what I kind of liked about having it computer generated, it's kind of like having technology pervert your music. So it makes it a little bit more sinister that you got this technology coming in. But then when I have it generating all these sounds, a lot of them are harsh. So I can't just take all of them. I have to get rid of the most of what comes out, and I have to select the few that I want to use. And I start using them, and I mix them with other sounds that are coming from the synthesizer. So now I have my hands in it. So it's no longer just purely computer generated. Now I'm perverting what the computer is doing, and it's making it truly double sinister. And then I generate these tracks, and then I was happy that they worked for me, but I wasn't so sure if other people would have kind of got what I was doing, because they become quite bizarre, because the computer can generate quite bizarre stuff that you wouldn't normally hear from a musician.
That's, you know that sure, gif of the guy going with his head that just happened to me. My head just exploded.
Oh, and I should shout out, there's a video game musician from Brazil, Gustavo Barcamore, and we grew up together, kind of. We never met, but we kind of helped each other out as time went on. So he helped me teach me the fundamentals of music. So I have to mention him. But so I don't really use a keyboard per se. I just use my mouse and my computer. And because of that, I have my synthesizer and these scripts. And one day, like what Carmack has done for the Quake and Doom engines, I will release my scripts out into the wild. but it's really hard for anyone else but me to use them because it's all just typing in code and saying, I want this sound at this pitch. And wow. It doesn't even work in the normal music scale of these 12 steps per octave and these synths. I have it randomly choose, like sometimes you get 5 steps per octave, sometimes you get 4, sometimes you get 13. And so it doesn't work in a traditional musician.
This is part of what makes it unique.
Yeah. So one thing I was pleased about is since it's this custom synthesizer, it makes it a little bit different from what Aubrey Hodges did, because he would record sounds of him grunting. He recorded a sound of a fly in a can to create these buzzing sounds. Mine all comes from the synthesizer. And that kind of pushes it a little bit more of what Trent Reznor did with Quake. So I'm kind of on this Aubrey Hodges level, but I'm leaning towards Quake, the original Quake soundtrack, slightly more than what he would have done. So it puts it in this middle space that I found very pleasing at the time. I was actually surprised it ended up being so well.
This is all very interesting, and you know, it's easy when you're listening, just like as an idle listener, you don't realize everything that goes into the end product. So, you know, for me, this is I'm learning a lot about this because, you know, I've just been the end listener, like, oh, this sounds cool, you know. But I guess there's a lot of work that goes into making it sound cool.
Yeah, and one of the hard parts was since I have such a huge parameter space, so to create harmonic sounds, you create a bunch of frequencies that all fit in integer steps with each other. With dissonant sounds, they don't have these rules. So you have a huge space that you have to explore. And so one of the things I have to do is I have to try to restrict how this parameter space behaves. Like, I don't want it to be too noisy because then it doesn't sound like any kind of recognizable sound that you would want to hear. So I have to kind of narrow it down to give these sounds. And if I don't want to narrow it too much, because in the
pure chaos and music.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have to narrow it down to this narrow path, but I don't want to narrow it too much because then all my tracks start sounding the same. Right. And so you have to let it breathe, but you don't want to constrict it. And it's a strange balance. And sometimes I'm always updating my synthesizer, but sometimes I end up slowly incrementing it into a place where I no longer like it. So I have to go back to an older version and increment it differently. And one of the things I actually did, I had a bug in it where I was trying to smooth it out, but it wasn't smoothing properly. So at every wavelength, there was a little bit of a glitch. And I fixed that. And then all my sounds started sounding very smooth and bland. And I was so disappointed. So I had to go back and just let that glitch come back in. And then it gives me some higher texture, some little bit of hiss to give a little bit of brightness to my sounds.
I think what I'm going to give you a suggestion because there's a great album from Marilyn Manson called Antichrist Superstar, and that was produced produced by Trent Reznor. And I know that in one setup they were in a giant warehouse or factory space with a lot of reverb, and they had these gigantic speakers, and they would do riffs and things from those speakers and record that. And that might be something cool to really just go find some abandoned factory somewhere and get some large speakers and just crank all the horrible sounds that you've been avoiding, you know, that the stuff that you've been avoiding, and then record it in that space.
Yeah.
It would be really cool. I just want to hang out with you and make really cool sounds. That's my dream, man. I got to come out there.
It's funny that you mentioned that because although the kids these days might not know who I'm talking about, but the old Motown record studio, what they used to do is they would have speakers up in the attic, and they would have the speakers play what they're singing into the attic of the house, this house. And then they'll have a microphone on the other end to record the reverb. And so a lot of these Motown sounds have this natural reverb that come from that comes from an attic of the Motown studios.
Is that like Phil Spector you're talking about producing those, or is that just what they did on the Motown records? Because I love Motown, but I know nothing about the history and production.
It's like the Four Tops. I'm trying to think what else. My wife knows more about Motown than I do. But yeah, the Four Tops. And I'm probably missing quite a few names on there. But it's back in Detroit from the 50s, 60s.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome.
But so... You mentioned about playing my horrible sounds in a factory, old empty warehouse, and you actually are onto something there. So one thing that makes some of my sounds horrible is if they're too noisy or their frequency range is too high. So they start producing these really high-pitched sounds. And one thing that reverb does, it filters out the frequencies. And if you have rough surfaces, the frequencies that go away first are the higher frequencies. So you're left with the lower bass tones. And so that's how reverb can smooth out. And reverb was one of the things that I knew I had to program into my synthesizer. So I had to make my own reverb effect. And the way I did it is I was listening to what they call impulses. So if you just click or do a snap, you can hear the room echo a little bit. And that echo is the impulse. So I can take those impulses and apply them to my music to add reverb. And so what I did is I was listening to these impulses and I realized they kind of sound like a gunshot. And I was thinking like, oh, I can probably make gunshot sounds with my synthesizer. So what I did was I took harsh white noise, and over time I filtered out the frequencies and cut off the highs, and I keep on cutting them off. And I learned about these convolution processes from physics that allowed me to do that. So I generate my own custom impulses that are ridiculously high quality because I make them myself, and I apply them to my music. So all my effects are all within my synthesizer. I don't take my sounds and go to a different program and add reverb. I don't do any of that. All that stuff comes straight from my synthesizer. And then what I do on my own is I'll adjust the frequencies, adjust the timing. I'll swap the sounds out, and I try to get it into some reasonable shape.
Wow. That's crazy. There's a famous map that I'm still looking for. From 1996 when Quake, the map specs were released. Someone made a map in, text edit, basically. Ooh. Yeah. It's a shoebox and there's a lot of crisscrossing. But anyway, I'm kind of digressing. But what you're doing, in effect, is the same thing with music, right? I mean, you're writing code to generate sounds. That's just astounding. It's so cool.
Yeah, there's not many people that are musicians now that do that kind of thing. It's something that you would find that people make composing music for the Nintendo or the Genesis or the Commodore 64. Mm-hmm. They would be programming that kind of stuff in there. Once it became to like the Super Nintendo and the Nintendo 64, they started using sound samples. And now these days, you just use a full-fledged audio workstation, which... If you want to make a sound, you download an instrument from a VST from some website. You don't program it as much anymore.
I did want to say that it was surprising to me to hear that you do this all basically in software, because, you know, the first few times I heard your work, I was like, how is he getting these sounds? What are these? I'm trying to place where I would have heard this, but you created it in the computer, which is really amazing.
Yeah.
So it sounds like samples to me. It sounds like manipulation of samples, but it's not. It's all synthetic, basically.
Yeah, and the reason why it sounds not just because I have all these parameters that musicians wouldn't vary, like a bit crunch. And I just have them constantly varying. And so they sound like something that a normal person would be crazy to do themselves. But luckily, I have the computer helping me out on that side of things.
Well, it's safe to say this is kind of, to describe it in a different way, maybe kind of like anti-music. Although it's melodic, you're not really following, you know, the same kind of time format that you would get in regular music.
Yeah, and that's kind of so when you talk about ambient music in general, it's not necessarily a specific genre. It's a style, because you can use instruments that typical music uses, but you do it in a different style. And not all ambient artists think this way, but the way I think of it, I'm trying to create the sounds of a natural environment. So in my tracks, you hear like these deep humming layers, and sometimes they're not deep. Sometimes I'll bring them up to the surface, like, and they're supposed to kind of represent winds going through these arcane structures or these desolate landscapes. And so I have these deep layers.
The definition of background music, because just kind of like you were describing for like the Doom and Quake 64 soundtracks, it kind of just melts into the background and you don't really notice it until it's not there.
And the idea is to make these maps feel more alive, like they exist in a certain time and place, that there's things going on with them. And then I'll have things like, I have what I call my effect layers, where if you hear a sound, I kind of think of it as like an alien life form making a sound. And I really wanted to have all its variants, because if you hear creatures making a noise, it's not exactly the same each time they do it. So you want to have a little variation going on. And also, like, if you hear like a flock of birds, you hear one make a sound and then they all kind of repeat and echo it back. So when I have my sounds in there, I'll often have a echo going on. So like echoing back, kind of emulating what life forms do. And there's something from information theory that, so all my backgrounds are kind of noisy. And if you're trying to send some sort of message through a lot of noise, if you want it to be heard, you repeat it. And they found that birds in cities will often repeat the same sounds over and over, because to get all over this noise. So I kind of implemented that with my echoes, trying to make it feel like it could be an alien soundscape that actually exists someplace and not just something I made up.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like, I remember like there's like certain channels on television that would just play music, and some of them would be like pleasant soundscape, and there'd be like, you know, wind or like waves crashing on a beach to try and like calm you down and relax you. This is like the opposite, but in a way it's kind of also
diametrically opposed.
It's definitely that, but yeah. It's calming in its own way.
Yeah, it's for people that have gone through a different cultural background. So I grew up very introverted. So I wouldn't socialize much. I didn't like the top 40 music. I liked video game music. Like, one of my first moments of being surprised by music was Super Metroid on the Super Nintendo, because there's this one track, Marita, Rocky Soil, that just is absolutely depressing. I was shocked, because you never hear that walking around through like Walmart. You're not going to hear a depressing track suddenly play. So I grew up in a different cultural background. And what Dump Truck said, that he doesn't really find horror movies scary. And I don't find them scary either, but I love them. Like, I love Alien. That's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, mine too.
And so it's like this cultural background that, if we want to have calming and relaxing music, we want to have music that kind of reminds us of these films, these horror films that we grew up with. And so that's why I choose these kind of horror soundtracks to fall asleep to, because they literally calm me down. And that's why when I want to make music, I was like, yes, I want to make the most sinister and the most horror sounding tracks that I can possibly make. I don't know if I can achieve it, but it's worth a try.
Would you say that you've achieved it? You've achieved it.
Oh yeah, for sure. But would you say that some of this comes from like a nostalgia, a place of nostalgia?
Yeah, definitely. Since I first heard the Doom 64 soundtrack and the Quake 64 soundtracks from Abby Hodges, they kind of got culturally ingrained in my head. And as a dark ambient artist, a lot of them don't necessarily realize that you're tapping into a specific culture and it's not very big. So you can't expect to get a huge career out of it. You have to kind of accept that you're doing this because you love it and you want to share it with others. And that's why I never really expected to get any money from it. I was surprised that I did. I think Dump Truck kind of started that thing going on when you made the good suggestion of having all my albums for sale with one price, and that was great. And so I've been really blown away by the support I've gotten. And a lot of that money actually goes, because my mom's retired now, she doesn't get a lot of money. So I usually send her like PayPal money, like $50 here and there, so she can go out and get a dinner. So a lot of the money that I get through my Bandcamp goes to help my mom out in her retirement.
Nice. You better name an album after.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But from her generation, of course, she's not going to understand at all what I'm doing with dark ambient.
Right. But, like, what is this devil music?
Yeah.
When I first got a Bandcamp account, there was a sale for a cryo chamber artist, Creation 6, and it was like 30 albums or something, and most of them are really good. It's really great ambient stuff, and I think it was like $10 or $15. I'm like, that's awesome. I mean, and I still haven't listened to all of them. I still kind of dip into those every once in a while. So that's what I was wondering, because I wanted your stuff right away. And I'm like, I want to pay you. I want to pay for this. This is awesome. Can I just buy them all at once? And so I highly recommend, you know, especially mappers out there, go take a listen to this stuff, because it is, you know, JCR's map was for Jam X was fantastic, but this music just put it up over the top. When you're playing that map with that music, it really elevates the map. So,
and for mapping itself, it's good to listen to while mapping, which I think you alluded to earlier. You know, it just gets you in the mood.
Oh, absolutely.
And so one of the things I always kind of wondered, that when I started making my music, if are people going to tell me that I would have to do like put in happy stuff to contrast against the darker stuff? And then I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to put happy stuff in my music. So like one thing you'll find in my synthesizer, there's no way to do major chords, which are the happier sounding chords. You can only do power chords, which are neutral, and minor chords. That's it. I don't have option to do anything else. I don't want to put an option to do anything else in there. So I kind of like, well, instead of doing happy versus foreboding or happy versus sad, I'm going to do harsh versus sad to keep players on unease. And if you listen to like the Trent Reznor Quake 1 soundtrack, it has this thick layers of harsh noise with a little bit of sadness peeking out every now and then. And when you're playing Quake, there's a sense of being unease that you're not that you don't belong there. And I love that kind of stuff.
Indeed.
It's true. It's a landmark piece of collection of music.
I wish there was kind of a place like so we have a Bandcamp for musicians, but we don't have like a map camp for mappers where we could just donate to our favorite mappers, because they seriously put a lot of work into these maps. So when they use one of my songs, I'm usually very happy because they've put their life and soul into these maps and they honor me by choosing one of my tracks. So I wish there's some way I could just go, no, don't take my money. Here, let me put money into your thing.
Well, I say just pay it forward. I think you got a good idea with your mom, taking care of your mom and all that stuff. So I would never, I've been offered money for my tutorials and I'm like, no, that's not why I do it. I'm very fortunate. I have a good job. you know, everything's good and I'm happy to give things away. So, and I think a lot of mappers are that way.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way too. Like I do it as a hobby, you know, and you know, you can send me dump trucks money. Just kidding. But it's really, it is like a labor of love. And it's just, you know, to get your mind off of the money-making processes.
Yeah, yeah. And since you mentioned Trent Reznor's soundtrack, so Trent Reznor has a lot of noise and rhythms and patterns, and a lot of Quake mappers are looking for that kind of thing. And the way I set my synthesizer up, it doesn't really yield itself easily to that. I am thinking about, before I start mixing my guitar in, I'm thinking about taking my stems, my music, my sounds tidbits, and putting them into FL Studio and overlaying beats and rhythms. And I've sent you some tracks, and I've done rhythms and beats in the past. I just don't do it as much anymore. So I'm thinking like, okay, maybe if I can remember enough of what I used to do, I can do that. But in the meantime, so I'm a part of this Dark Ambient Discord that was set up by Lindsay, and she has been very helpful, and she's more capable of doing these beats and rhythms. And there's other people that are interested in making music for Quake, like Sleep Circle, Ronald Poe. And so one of the things I'm planning on doing is setting up a Google Drive folder where if a mapper goes in, they will see folders of all kinds of artists. In the folder, you find all their contact information, where you can download music if you want to use it for your Quake maps. But also, I'm going to put in some of my unreleased tracks. So one of the hardest things for me when I release my music is the visual stuff. So for like, if I release on Bandcamp, I need album art. And for Mechanized, I sat on that album for about a month because even though I'm okay with Photoshop, I'm not the best. So I couldn't generate that kind of art. And I have a YouTube channel where I pair videos to my music and I try to get the listener in this kind of mindscape of these foreign and alien environments. And I record a bunch of footage using one of my video cameras, but now I'm running out of footage and I can't just put red cloud, green cloud, blue cloud. I have to do other things. So when Newhouse and JCR collaborated on their latest map.
It was SM-199.
Yes, yes, that's it.
Yeah.
Newhouse, since I'm helping with the finished map jam, you will hear at least three unreleased tracks coming out on that map jam. But Newhouse had access to some of my unreleased stuff, and he brought it over. So JCR, you could use it with Newhouse and make that map. And so it was unreleased track. And I was like, yes, use that. And then you guys came up with the map, and I was like, yes, I can record disturbing video of this map, and then I can release that with my music on my YouTube page. So I'm going to be putting in this Google Drive unreleased tracks, and if mappers want to use them, I would like to use their maps to make kind of like dark ambient music videos and put them on my YouTube page, give them all the credit, and hopefully encourage more people to play Quake. But conversely, whatever artists are putting music into that Google Drive, that might get the other artists more attention as well to their music, kind of forming more of a synergy thing between the two communities.
That's really
awesome.
Yeah, sounds great.
Everything you just, I'm completely on board with all of that because
a lot of the maps now are using regular, like the same soundtrack that's been used for, you know, decades. So changing it up, I think really makes a big difference.
Yeah, and I know there's some interest from the dark ambient side because Lindsay, she already made two tracks for that sewer map jam. I know Yoder used one. I don't know who used the second. And I know Kane has a map that he wasn't able to finish that during the time, but that will use a third track. So there's already a couple people on our side who are excited about composing music for Quake maps. And plus, other artists are a little bit easier to work with and a little bit better at customizing than I would be. So forming this merger, I think, will help both of us out.
I think so. Because it would also get exposure for their work.
Yes, yes. And so Dump Truck mentioned Cryo Chamber. That really gets a lot of views. But if you're a different dark ambient artist, not on Cryo Chamber, it's really hard to find where your fans might be. Like, there's these Facebook pages for dark ambient, and all you see is artists trying to share your work there, getting no responses, and it's really depressing. The dark ambient Reddit's a little bit better. You'll get some views, but you don't get a lot. And I think going through custom Quake maps where players get to hear their tracks, it will really help out a lot of these smaller dark ambient artists just to get their stuff out there.
And in a way, you're forming a music video, quote unquote.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, like I said, you were very generous with connecting me with people that have a little bit more rhythmic stuff, mm-hmm. because I was going to cut a trailer. Unfortunately, I never cut the trailer, but I did kind of a little montage for Jam X Insomnia, and I gave credit to Star Thief because, like I say, I think it's amazingly generous for someone to put something out there, even though it's kind of a promotional thing. You know, they said, yes, right away. And it was, I was able to pick and choose whatever one I wanted to use. And I was really happy to give any kind of exposure. So I say we go for this and, try to get as many people using custom tracks as possible. One of the issues is the track listing, but most of the source ports, you basically have to call your music track and then three digits. So if we could come up with a community standard and maybe kind of take dibs because we have to be careful if they are not mods or they're not in a mod folder. You don't want to overwrite and always play a certain track. So you
guys that might replace the default music and that might not be good.
Correct. And it's one of two things. Either we get all the major source ports to allow for, this would be better in my opinion, to allow for custom music tracks. I know that I would imagine an FTE has it, or maybe not, but Dark Places probably does have it. But we need to get those Fitzquake variants. So if there's any engine coders out there, let's make this a standard so we can just put whatever music we want in the tracks.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I'm good at is causing problems for coders. Yeah, because before now, they probably didn't have to think about too much about an influx of music tracks.
Well, I really want to get this going. I'm excited. So, yes, exactly. I mean, more content and it brings so much to your maps. It really does to the experience. I'm trying to think. I think I only did one. Really, technically two. I did a kind of a mediocre Quoth map for one of the jams. I'm spacing on it now, but
was it Jam 9?
It was Jam 9. Why would I not remember that? Yeah, Jam 9. I did it. I had an old track that I had made, an old ambient track, quote unquote ambient track, that I was just messing around with Acid back in 1999, by the way. Acid, not LSD Acid, but Acid the music program.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did that, and people were really complimentary of it, and I was very happy to have included it because it did give such a tone to that map. And like I say, the map was kind of mediocre and a little clunky, but it helped out. And then I also did another one, and this is interesting. I want to get your take on this, Jake, because what I did not want people playing music. So I put an ambient, just a kind of a drone, kind of a little light electricity sound underneath the entire map as a loop so that no one could play music because it had a bunch of dialogue and it had a bunch of sound design that they wanted to play. That was the 100 Brush Jam.
Yeah, you didn't want that to be interrupted in that dialogue.
Correct. Yeah, which it ended up working great because it was sort of like remember in Star Trek the original series where Kirk and Spock are down with the away team on the planet and there's that
sound. Yeah, and the ship itself has all these ambient sounds that just fill up.
And that's what I thought of. I thought, well, this is my Star Trek sound.
Oh,
Yeah, one thing for because of the engine limitations back in the day, there were 8-bit. And one thing 8-bit does is introduce this, what they call quantization noise. So you have all these fixed amplitudes, and they kind of rapidly change between these levels, and they produce this high frequency noise. But if you have like a noisy Trent Reznor soundtrack behind it, it masks all of this quantization noise that comes down when you try to fade out and things like that. So a lot of these soundtracks really help a lot of these old games. Like if you listen to like Elder Scrolls Daggerfall, which sometimes doesn't have that soundtrack behind it, you hear all these crunches that end the sounds. And for me, as someone who re-listens to sounds, it annoys me a little bit. But if you play Quake, that's all masked out nicely in the soundtrack itself.
Exactly. Even the null sound, which plays when you when you're in the Quake C, when you don't want a sound to play, or you're triggering off a sound or whatever, even that has quantization, whatever that word is.
It has quantization.
Quantization. Yeah. It has the noise. So the noise that's a null sound has noise in it, if you listen very carefully. So
yeah. So I've actually been dabbling a little bit in making sound samples for Quake. The source ports, from what people tell me, still force everything into 8-bit. So although you might have like a 16-bit sound, once it gets played back through the source port, it ends up being 8-bit. So in the Finnish map jam, there's one map which I actually recorded myself laughing and edited it. And you will hear that in there. And so I've been learning of how to deal with that 8-bit kind of noise problem. And a lot of it is making sure you really compress the sound. So most of the waveform appears at high amplitudes, and making sure your edges don't trail off more. But if we're going to make code requests to people, I request source ports that will play sounds back at 16-bit, then that will save me a bunch of time.
Well, are you sure that's right. It doesn't play it back. What I do is I do 22K 16-bit, and when it downsamples, there's not as much noise.
Yeah.
So that's a good alternate to that, but yeah, hey, why not? Since we're asking.
Oh, and since I get to ask, so I get three wishes, right? So we get music stuff, sound stuff, and my third wish is, so a lot of the purists might not like this, but one thing I kind of would like in Quake is simple weapon animations between switching them. So right now it's instant switch. And me as a physicist, it's kind of like, where did this come from?
How dare you, sir? You can't mess with that.
Yeah, how dare you? So I'd like it just like, because what Doom did, it was just a simple weapon up. I'd like that for Quake, but it can be really fast. So when you switch, it just comes up really fast. That's something I would like, but might change the gameplay in a direction people might not like.
Well, multiplayers, they would not have that. So
I know.
Yeah. It'd have to be disabled.
Luckily, I'm an introvert, so I don't play much multiplayer.
Well, we got to change that. I have to play more myself, actually. But so listen, before we kind of wrap, I wanted to get to your day job, because when you sent over, JCR and I were talking about this, and we looked at your bio, and my jaw hit the ground. So do you want to talk a little bit about your day job?
Yeah. So I learned all these techniques with programming and signal analysis when I was getting my PhD in physics, and specifically I'm in biophysics. So when I was studying for my degree, I usually studied cell membranes. So us humans are made up of a bunch of cells, and each cell has like a skin of their own. And I look at the membranes around them. And back then I was studying fish oil supplements. And you might see them on like the store counters and whatnot. And we're trying to figure out what happens on a molecular level. And what I found out is when you take fish oil supplements, they get incorporated into the membrane and they create little domains. So if you're a Quake mapper, it's kind of like if you have lava in this area and then a solid surface in this area, the fish oil is kind of like the lava. But these domains are important because sometimes, like if you're Chthon, you might want to be in that lava, and that's where you can really cause a lot of damage. And so a lot of these proteins that are like sensing, so they help us see, they help us feel, they might prefer to exist in these little domains. And that is one mechanism why like fish oils might be healthy for you. And I come at it through a physics background because a lot of biologists, it's hard for them to look at the molecules and mathematically quantify them. So the technique I use is called nuclear magnetic resonance. It's the cousin to magnetic resonance imaging, which used to have the word nuclear in it before, but that would scare people, so they took the nuclear out. And instead of looking at whole bodies, I go down on the molecular scale and I look at the molecules themselves, trying to figure out how they move, how they behave. And right now I work at Purdue University and I look at these protein molecules, which allow immune cells to message each other. And so if you have autoimmune diseases, like one of them is rheumatoid arthritis, they see this molecule, and specifically called SYK for short, and they see it being overexpressed. Now we know that there's a mechanism to disable it, but we don't know how that mechanism works. And I use my techniques to try to figure out how that mechanism works. We haven't figured it out yet, but I have some ideas and we're going to do some techniques to see if we can figure out how this mechanism, how to stop it.
That's amazing. And I will say, for as grateful as I am as a Quaker to like have your music and listen to your music, enjoy your music and utilize it, I just got to say, just on a human level, thank you so much for all the dedication, because you went to school for X amount of years, yeah, and you are contributing to the greater good. So thank you, man. I mean, that's amazing.
And I want to tell people out there that in high school, my grades weren't great. I wasn't good at math, believe it or not. I didn't even finish calculus in high school. I started college in basic geometry. So you really don't need to have all this background. You just need to have a passion for it. And I have a passion for science. So I didn't care what grades I was going to get. I was saying, I'm doing this. And and I survived. And, you know, and you think like, how am I going to get into a university with bad grades? You don't. Do what I did. Go through a community college. Really care about your studies. You bring your grades there. And then a university would look at you. So for me, University of Arizona, I applied there for my community college. And they looked at my grades and they're like, they said they'll take me in as an honor student. And that's from having really bad grades in high school.
Mm-hmm. Well, high school sucks, basically.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
honestly, I didn't enjoy because of the phase that you are in your life, it's just not going to be a great experience for many, many, many people.
Yeah, and a lot, it's not there. The students are not there because they want to be there. Well, some of them do, but a lot of them come from bad homes and are forced to be there and they're acting out. And so it's not always a great experience. But when you go to like a college or a community college, so a community college has a lot of working class people that, including me, my family couldn't afford paying for my university. I had to work side jobs or hopefully eventually get scholarships or like, since my family income was so low, the government has a FAFSA grant and they were able to support me on that FAFSA grant to encourage me to go to college. So, and when you're there at the community college, you find a lot of like-minded people who are passionate about what they want to do. And it really helps you out in studying and caring about what you're pursuing.
So does that mean there's still hope for me to get my PhD?
There's hope for everyone. So there's like, for example, there's someone who recently rotated through our lab and that person was at least in their late 60s, finally deciding to get their PhD.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And this is in the hard sciences. So it's not easy, but it's just about having the passion for it. It's going to be hard, but try not to demotivate yourself. Keep your eyes on the prize. This is about what you want to do. Sometimes you might get a teacher that will say, like I had one teacher that after we got our exams back, all of us didn't do well. And the teacher said, I wish this was back 30 years ago because I would start kicking some people out of the class. And that really irked me.
Wow.
But I wasn't sure if he was talking about me, but at the time I kind of thought he was. But now when I think about it, it could have been multiple of us. But I said, no, that teacher doesn't know where I'm coming from, and I'm just going to keep on going. And his class was only one semester, so I just had to get through that, and then I didn't have to worry about him again. But it's more about me wanting and having a passion in science. And you mentioned Star Trek before, and believe it or not, it was Star Trek that really got me into it. Even with all of its cheesiness and stuff, it at least made science sound exciting, and that's why I wanted to pursue it.
Well, that's about it for the Quakecast. I want to thank Immorpher for being on the show. I'm Dump Truck DS. You can find me on YouTube. Just look for Dump Truck_DS. And JCR, where can people find you?
Find me on YouTube, search JCR9001, or twitch.tv, JCR9001.
Cool. All right. We'll see you on the next Quakecast, everyone.